The unrest. Podcast.
Welcome to the Unrest Podcast.
We're glad you're back for more spooky delights. I'm Caitlin Stansel.
I'm Carter Coyle.
And I'm Madeline Green. We started this podcast because we love ghost stories, especially ones about your own haunting experiences.
And that's why we end each episode with our real life spook segment, because it's just one of the best parts when we get to hear about and share with our listeners their own kind of ghostly encounters.
We love that part, and it just kind of hits home the real life stories here, but we really do need your help. We want the segment to be listener driven. So if you are someone who doesn't enjoy the sound of your own voice, you're more comfortable writing to us, and then we can read your story or your experience over the air, just email us. We're at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com.
We also have an option for you to tell us your story yourself. We've kind of set up what is essentially a voicemail box through Google, and that allows you to call in and leave us a message telling us your story in its entirety.
That number to call is 843-564-2101. You're not calling into a live show or anything, so don't worry about that. It's simply just us recording for us to edit in later. But again, you just have to dial 843-564-2101. We want to start using those listener submissions by episode 7, which we're getting very close to.
Crazy.
Now, episode 4 today, this is called The Bloody Code, and we'll explain what that means in our Spook School segment in just a little bit.
But essentially, everything in this episode has to do with jail or prison, somewhere I hope I never end up.
Amen.
And the sentences of unrest some spirits still face today.
And since no one can travel right now, thanks
to COVID,
coronavirus, we thought that we would take you on a little trip to Ireland.
That's right. Ooh. My story is comes from Kilmainham Jail in Dublin, Ireland. That was one of the favorite places I've ever been. My husband and I, we weren't married at the time, but we visited my mom there in Ireland. She lived there for a summer, and the three of us took a little trip to Dublin, and the cathedral is beautiful, and downtown is super cool. Guinness factory is amazing, but weirdly enough, Kilmainham Jail, which is this historic spot there that's now a museum, was honestly one of the coolest and most emotional places we visited in all of Dublin and probably all of Ireland. We loved it. It was very neat. So that kind of inspired me to look up some of the hauntings of the jail and share that. So, but before we get into the story, what about you guys? Ireland is probably one of the biggest international trips I've ever taken and loved it. Any cool places y'all have been overseas?
No.
Where would you want to go?
Oh, I'd want to go everywhere. The only place out of the country I've been is Canada.
Cool.
And it's pretty fun. It's definitely different. It's very like wildernessy up that way. So that was kind of cool. But I would love to travel everywhere one of these days when I get really rich.
If you could choose like one country to go to tomorrow, where would you go?
I definitely want to go to Italy.
That's mine too. Italy and Greece.
That's like on my first. But I also love Bali.
Ooh.
I want to go there. But shoot, I'd go anywhere.
Caitlin, how about you? Where would you want to go?
The only international trip I've ever been on was on a cruise, so I don't really count that. Because you're not really like in the real part of the country when you get to their little ports.
Kind of all the touristy spots, but still cool.
I think like South Africa would be awesome. I've always wanted to cage dive with great white sharks.
Yeah. Did you know I did that?
That's a great spot for that.
You what? Did that?
Yes. I lived in South Africa for a summer for study abroad.
Wait, what? Heck?
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. And we, okay. So Vince Dooley, who's this legendary UGA football coach, actually came along with our trip because
awesome.
Side note, I did a story with him. He's a huge gardener too. He's like this football legend / amazing gardener. And South Africa is known for some of these amazing gardens. Long story short, he paid for all of us to go shark cage diving.
That's awesome.
Shut up.
Yeah. It was like a pilot program where we did like we did volunteering in the community and in the really, really impoverished areas, but we also did leadership and then the fun safari and all that. But the shark cage diving, legit.
Did you see a bunch of sharks?
We did. I mean, they basically lower you in the cage, and then all of a sudden you see a bunch of blood and guts getting thrown around you because they
chumming.
They entice them, and then yeah, man, great whites. It's no joke.
That is so cool.
That's so funny you say that, Caitlin. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. I love great white sharks, and you know, I did the O-Search story when their research vessel was off of the coast of South Carolina. They fish for great whites and they bring them up on their boat, like out of the water, so they can tag them and get samples and stuff. So I've seen one out of the water, but
is cool.
Yeah, I would love to cage dive and see them in their environment.
Yeah, and I've seen Jaws. There's that.
Yeah,
I'll have to find a picture. I was in like a wetsuit and I was so skinny. That was so long ago. Damn.
Yeah, let's post that.
They don't make wetsuits for me anymore.
Shut
maternity
up.
Maternity ones?
Definitely not a maternity bump shark suit.
I think that would be so cute.
One of my favorite trips I've ever been on, though, it wasn't international, but it was to California. AJ and I, we had gone out there for a wedding for his friend, and his uncle also lives in San Francisco, so we flew into San Diego, and then we road tripped up the Pacific Coast Highway into San Francisco, which was an amazing road trip. If anyone ever tries to talk you out of doing it because it's a long drive, don't listen to them because it's beautiful.
Amazing. I have to do that one day.
It was the fastest 8 hours of my life because there was just so much to look at. But the reason I'm telling you this is because in San Francisco, we went on a tour of Alcatraz.
Oh. Yes.
And side note, before I say that word, every time I have to think in my head, is it Azkaban or Alcatraz?
Oh, it's Azkaban.
But
the Dementors got you.
I mentioned that because that is one of the places that I've had a spooky experience before. I've only had, I think, two in my life that I can, you know, specifically remember, and they've both involved cameras and jails.
Oh shit.
So true.
And Alcatraz was one of them. And we'll post the video that I got on our group and our Facebook page and Instagram. So follow us on all those and you can see it.
Your creepy video.
Yeah. Basically, Alcatraz, it has this like, no one technically is buried there, but it has this Native American history. And they think that's a lot of the reason that it's haunted.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so we're like walking, there's one part where you kind of go underground and it's where, I believe if I remember correctly, they kept a lot of the Native American inmates. And AJ is like taking this Snapchat and his phone freaks out. And we didn't realize it when he was recording it, but later we like got back to his uncle's house and we're watching it and it's weird. And I've never seen a Snapchat video ever, ever, ever do this. And we had no other videos whatsoever that entire trip ever do this. It's like there's some kind of interference happening.
For sure. For sure.
That's awesome.
I haven't seen that. I got to see that.
Yeah. So we'll post that. And I bring that up because Cartier's story is about a jail and some spooky experiences there.
The gravel crunched underneath his feet as Patrick Healy approached the historic jail building west of Dublin. Healy had heard of Kilmainham Jail before. He'd obviously passed it plenty of times, but this was his first time actually going inside. It was pretty daunting, crumbling. He noticed the strange serpent-like carvings right above the main door as he passed through the front gates. But inside the courtyard was really nothing like the cold and hardened stone jail that he expected. It was overrun with vines and plants, and trees were actually growing through the walls. It's a good thing, he thought, that the Irish people were all pushing to restore this jail because it would be quite a project. Healy was one of the volunteers who'd offered to help clean and paint part of the facility and try to bring the inside back to life. His work was to start in the dungeon. Of course, just my luck, he's thinking as he hauled all his tools down the dark stairwell. It was musty and cold and damp, everything that a proper dungeon really should be, and luckily the restoration team had already set up lights and lanterns down in the dungeon, so at least the area was lit for him. Healy worked for hours every day, in and out. He was scrubbing and sanding and painting the walls.
he noticed that if he ran his finger over the grooves and the stones, some of them were just cracks from the weight of the jail above, but others were names that were carved into the walls, declarations that people had carved of Irish freedom, likely the last words that prisoners ever wrote before being executed.
I know, I was saying, freedom!
I just imagine Braveheart.
There's going to be a lot of that.
Was he Irish, though, or Scottish?
I don't know. Oh, maybe Scottish.
Close enough.
They're all fighting.
Who else is Scottish?
Madeline Green.
Jamie.
Oh.
From the Outlander. Well, it was on one of those days that Healy was volunteering and painting down in the dungeon that he felt a very cold, strong draft of air sweep across him. And he froze, kind of startled, because usually it was so hot down there. How would any wind be blowing through a dungeon? Then a second cool air swept across the room, giving him shivers and suddenly knocking over several of the lanterns, of course, making the room almost completely dark. Suddenly, he says that a force beyond a draft or a wind slammed him across the room. He hit the far wall, started shouting, and was almost unable to breathe. He was struggling to move and then realized he was pinned against the wall of the dungeon, fighting, shouting. Says he felt like he had invisible ropes around his arms and his legs, like he was tied to the wall. He started screaming from the pain and felt like he was being crushed alive. Healy says it was several minutes of thrashing and fighting before he was finally able to escape the wall and run away from the dungeon. And the other volunteers found him shaking, tongue-tied, and horrified, not by what he'd seen, but what he had not seen at all.
The unknown is always scarier than
right.
What we do know.
So that story is the actual story and idea of a painter who was down in the dungeon volunteering during the restoration of Kilmainham Jail is a true story, and one that's one of the most famous sightings at the jail. So certainly taking some liberties there, but at the same time, this whole idea of him being forced and pinned against a wall is a well-known haunting. So Kilmainham Jail opened in 1796, and it replaced an older prison. So it was actually considered one of the most modern buildings in Ireland at that time. It is now especially known because men, women, and children were all held there. In fact, I found that the youngest prisoner known was a girl who was only 7 years old, who was arrested and imprisoned for stealing a cloak.
That's mean.
Crazy stuff. As so many prisons and jails were at the time, the jailers were cruel. The conditions were terribly unhealthy. I read that the men had iron beds, but the women and kids had to sleep on straw mats on the floor. And as many as five people were crammed into every tiny little cell. And each cell had one candle to last 2 weeks. So there were no windows, no lights, no heat. It was dark, damp, very sickening conditions. And again, this is considered one of the most modern, so that's pretty bad.
Definitely doesn't compare to our jails and prisons today, that's for sure.
No. Now, the sad thing is that a lot of the people who were jailed there weren't even hardened criminals. They were jailed for petty theft or debt offenses. And I remember when Nick and I visited there, we heard about all the political prisoners, men and women, who were there over the years, and these poverty prisoners that sometimes there were people who were so entrenched in poverty that they actually stole or did bad things just so that they could have the chance to go live in this jail, because at least it meant they'd have food. We also know that more than 4,000 prisoners were sent over the years from Kilmainham to Australia, the convict colony, and so it kind of acted as a holding place for them before they were shipped off. Nowadays, though, the jail has kind of transformed, and it represents the deadly fight for freedom and independence in Ireland, because so many political prisoners who fought for Irish independence and all of these different skirmishes and wars over the years were jailed there. And leaders of at least five rebellions were incarcerated and executed there over 118 years. So this was a long fight in Ireland to gain independence from Britain. Now, walking through the tours now, They have the most amazing tour guides, and it is really a very cool museum. You can still see all the walls covered in messages from the prisoners. So that is a true part of our ghost story. Some of the last messages as these people were suffering and dying, and a lot of them writing or declaring freedom, Eva, until their last few minutes on Earth. The jail museum.
That's really cool.
Pretty amazing. The jail museum website says the main entrance was the formidable doorway above which five monstrous shapes writhe. These have been variously called dragons, demons, serpents, and even a hydra. It's said that they represent the five worst crimes: murder, rape, theft, treason, and piracy. Even women were publicly executed there up until 1821. Now, one of the very worst stretches of overcrowding documented in the jail was during the final years of the Irish famine. So inmates, 1845 to 1850 time frame, these inmates are crammed into cells, women, children, a lot of them charged and jailed for begging for food, stealing food. They had to be sleeping in corridors because it was so crowded. And like I said earlier, some actually stole or went to the jail on purpose just to have a roof over their heads and to have food at least once or twice a day because it was better than what they were getting on the streets. Now, fast forward to 1860, a new wing was added, and I was gonna show you guys kind of a video of some of this. Think of a jail being kind of ugly, but this new wing that was added in 1860 was actually beautiful. We saw it and toured it. And the Victorian belief was that architecture is crucial to inmates' reform. This is that new wing. It's striking, right? I mean, dare you say it's actually kind of beautiful. They had 96 cells, huge ceiling skylights, metal craftsmanship throughout. And the Victorian ideal was that these tall windows in the cells would force the prisoners to look heavenward and rethink their life choices. So in terms of a jail, the restoration is really amazing, and it really is a beautiful piece of architecture.
What I like most about it is the metalwork is intricate.
Yes.
You would never think you would see that in a jail.
No, never. And look at those walls right there where the messages are.
Oh, wow.
Pretty amazing. So this is the older part of the jail.
Cool that they saved that, you know, like during the renovations, they didn't get rid of those kind of carvings into the walls.
I read that some things were lost, but they have tried to restore as much as they can, realizing the value of that now. In 1910, so about 50 years after that new wing is added, it was actually closed as a convict prison and handed over to the British as a military detention center. So that's when it really started housing political prisoners. And the most famous and well-known of those stories is the Easter Rising in 1916. So there was an armed rebellion. The men and women who were fighting for Irish freedom seized buildings in Dublin and declared themselves as an Irish Republic. But unfortunately, the English defeated the Irish, and 90 people were condemned to death. And we know that at least 15 of those leaders were executed right there by firing squad out in this courtyard. And those crosses there represent those 15 leaders who were executed. The most well-known story of those executions was James Connolly. He was one of the men who had dedicated himself to breaking Ireland free from British rule, and he was described as the most effective and inspirational of the rebel leaders during that insurrection. He apparently was quite the military leader, even though, you know, they were a rebellion gang. He got seriously injured in his leg during the fight, and after the Irish surrendered, he was taken to the hospital under basically, you know, escort by the military. And at the hospital, they found out he had gangrene from that leg wound, and so he was in really rough shape. He was found guilty actually at the hospital, sentenced to death, allowed to see his wife and his daughter one last time, and then taken to Kilmainham jail. He told the priest there that he forgave his executioners and basically respected anybody who was just doing their duty, including them. His wounds were so bad, this is kind of the infamous part of the story, that apparently he had to be tied to a chair and carried out to the courtyard for his execution. So imagine his 14 other leaders in the rebellion standing there, and he is in such bad shape that they actually haul him out in a chair tied up. And one story I read said that he insisted on standing next to his comrades to face his death, but he tried and collapsed. So they eventually tied him to a stretcher and propped him against a wall, and then they shot and killed them all. Ultimately, that story did not go over well, okay? Maybe the point was to dissuade the Irish from rebelling, but it had the complete opposite effect. Ultimately, all of those leaders became martyrs and are now Ireland national heroes, according to the Boston Herald. And really, it made the Irish people very bitter, because it was just such a, you know, when you think about hauling essentially a prisoner of war and tying him up for execution, it just gives you chills. And those black crosses are still in the courtyard today representing that. There's a list of the men out on a plaque. So republicanism surged at that point. Even some of the British people and other people across the world were horrified by how it all went down. And there were a couple of other wars during which Kilmainan later was used for prisoners until Ireland was finally declared an independent country. And the jail was closed in 1924. 1937, Ireland officially establishes a new constitution and declares a sovereign, independent, democratic state. But I mean, hundreds of years they had that fight to freedom, and so many people were executed in that same jail over and over again, fighting for the same thing. So it is quite the symbol in Dublin and in Ireland now. And it wasn't until 1960, so about 35 years after the jail closed, that there was like this effort of restoration, and that it became a national monument to people who died for Ireland. And they wanted to document that struggle for independence and started asking people in Ireland if they had stories and documents or relics of that time. So apparently when they went in, it was completely overgrown, truly looked like a jungle. You could not see the walls. You could not hardly walk through it. It was so overgrown. Pigeons flying around, rats all over the place. So it was an undertaking to restore the jail. And Kilmainan is absolutely beautiful. And if anyone ever goes to Ireland, Dublin, make sure you put it on your list for a tour. And it will leave you not only thinking about the many possible ghosts that are there, but all of the people who died fighting for freedom, which us Americans can certainly relate to.
I mean, if those walls could talk, can you imagine all the stuff that it saw?
No. And I also read that some of the women and children were allowed to be a little bit more free in and out of the cells. And so that actually gave them the opportunity to create literature and write and like continue fighting behind closed walls. So there's a lot of pamphlets and such that actually were snuck out of the jail at that time fighting for independence. So very cool what an amazing role it played in the fight, and how now it really has taken on kind of a life and a memorial of its own.
Yeah, and so that kind of goes along with today's spook school. We're going to learn a little bit about transportation sentences. The first thing I think of when I hear that is sometimes in the Bible you would hear that people were exiled to islands or deserts, and that's what it makes me think of first off. And it's really not too far from that. Our episode is called The Bloody Code because of this, and that name was given to the English legal system from the late 17th century to the early 19th century. The number of crimes carrying the death penalty in 1688 was 50. And some of those crimes that you could be hanged for were, of course, murder, but then arson, forgery, cutting down trees.
Wow.
What? You could get hanged for cutting down a tree?
Yep. Stealing horses or sheep, destroying turnpike roads, stealing from a rabbit warren. I don't know what that means.
Wait, what did you say? A rabbit?
A rabbit warren?
Yeah.
Is that like a rabbit hole?
I don't know.
I'm going to Google that real fast.
It just says stealing from a rabbit warren, pickpocketing goods, being out at night with a blackened face.
What the hell?
Being an unmarried mother concealing a stillborn child.
Okay.
Stealing from a shipwreck or wrecking a fish pond. So these were just some of the crimes that people could be hanged for.
I found out what it is.
What's a rabbit warren?
So it says it's a series of underground tunnels where rabbits live, or a building or place with many connected rooms or passages. So I guess stealing from a building, maybe?
I'm not down with that. That's very weird.
Why would you call it that? It's so strange.
I have no idea.
Okay, Madeline, that's cool. I did not know any of that.
Those rabbit warrens, they're
they'll get
tricky. But there are many reasons why the English legal system was really harsh. Attitudes of wealthy men who made the law were unsympathetic and felt that these people who committed these crimes, even if they were small crimes, were sinful, lazy, and greedy people. So after that was kind of put into place, they realized that some of these crimes were not as serious as the punishment,
obviously.
So this transportation sentencing came about after that. And a good example of when this first started was the Irish Catholics were banished to the West Indies. In the 18th century, like we said, the death penalty was too severe for certain offenses.
Let me just say, these poor Irish Catholics, I mean, seriously.
And the West Indies, like, what a different atmosphere from where you grew up and lived.
Yeah, it's like, let's throw you into something that's really going to make you go crazy. Obviously, instead of putting these people to death, they started to transport them to places in North America. North America was then replaced by New South Wales as a suitable penal colony. And after the American War of Independence, being put to death was only used for serious crimes. So this transportation sentencing became the thing to do.
What kind of colony was it?
Penis colony. Penal. You had criminals who were being convicted to serve 7 years or more being exiled to what they called colonies. And in the Victorian period, they actually changed this name and they started to call this type of sentencing penal. God, now, I can't believe y'all made me do that now. They started to call this type of sentencing penal servitude because...
Is that what marriage is?
Yes. Penal servitude.
Indeed.
They called it penal servitude because they had to partake in doing hard labor. So it was almost like they were working off their crimes in this Victorian period, and their sentences were actually reduced by quite a bit. But after 1857, the Penal Servitude Act, transportation sentencing was abolished, even though there was still a lot of that type of sentencing still going on.
So what were they doing at the colonies? Just working or building stuff?
Yes. So normal transportation sentencing, they would pretty much just gather everyone up and take them somewhere. Well, in the Victorian period, they didn't like that idea. So they made it where you pretty much had to work off your crime. And so because they would work, they would get a shorter sentence.
Gotcha.
Makes more sense than just transporting them somewhere.
You're getting something out of it.
Yes, hopefully. But legislation pertaining to transportation from Britain to New South Wales was passed in 1784, and then an Irish Act followed in 1786. The British Act did not even name where you were going to be exiled. It just said, beyond the sea, either within His Majesty's dominions or elsewhere outside of His Majesty's dominions.
Oh, that's specific.
The dominions.
One day I want to have a dominion.
Not a dementor. A
dominion. No.
Just those my are own. In Alcatraz or Azkaban.
And the main difference in the two acts was the effect of enabling this transportation of criminals to Australia from England, which went underway in 1787. Whereas the Irish Act had issues within it and it took it a little longer. During all this, Australia received 160,000 convicts.
Wow.
Holy cow.
And 26,500 who sailed from Ireland.
Oh, like those people from Kilmainan.
Yep. And that can't be an easy journey.
No. And these colonies that they went to were often overcrowded and decaying. So because of the deplorable conditions, the male convicts were removed. After they were removed, the conditions at this depot improved considerably.
You know, they were peeing in all the corners and everything.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that's kind of my take on transportation sentences.
I bet so many people, I'm kind of thinking like Handmaid's Tale, where they're banished to the colonies. And so many people, like, they basically have to go there till they die. And I imagine a lot of these people had to have died from disease and sanitary issues or overworking. I mean,
or just stayed in Australia or wherever they ended up.
I actually read that a lot of the people never went back home. So they did just end up staying there or going somewhere else. A lot of them didn't have enough money to go back home because at this time you're not really working for money. You're a criminal. So they never were able to go back home and see their family.
It certainly seems like the punishment does not fit the crime in a lot of cases.
No.
Yeah, luckily, it sounds like a life sentence.
Yeah, I mean, it is better than being hanged, maybe.
Yeah, I don't for sure.
I guess, depending on how terrible the conditions were. But it still is a little extreme for if you stole from the rabbit warrens.
Like, what the heck? Can someone please write to us what the heck that means? I mean, like, we Googled the general meaning, but...
But I'm still confused.
You stole from the rabbit, their little collection of lettuce in their tunnels.
That's interesting, Madeline. It kind of makes it feel more like real life to learn some of the history behind it. That's really cool.
And again, it's so interesting to just think about how jails and prisons and sentences have changed, you know, to modern times now.
Well, because, I mean, how many times do you see people today that kill people and don't die?
Oh, yeah.
I think today could be a little firmer than it is.
And you know, it's not a perfect system. Obviously, we get the calls all the time from mistreatment in prisons and that sort of thing. But this does put it in a little bit of perspective. I hope that it's not conditions like that. You hear that? No, it's our neighbors.
Oh, no.
They must know I record at this time every week because every single Tuesday they're out there doing yard work or construction.
One time, this is a total side note, but Madeline, remember that one time that Candy was in her house next door, like, banging on her cabinets, and we heard this noise, and we thought someone was outside of our house, like, hitting on our house. It was so loud. And so
this is the best. We go downstairs and we have like a side door and we're like, oh my God, someone's trying to get in, y'all. And we were in a gated community. However, there was some like extracurricular activities that went on around the gated community.
AKA drug deals.
Yes.
Yeah. And you could like climb under our gate if you really wanted
that's
to.
That's effective.
We did that a lot of times coming home from Five Points. Drop us off here. And we did like the whole roll under it, you know. But might have stolen a stop sign or two.
So y'all thought someone was breaking in?
Yes. And Caitlin goes to the door and she's
Madeline,
like,
wait, what were you holding? You were holding something random that you were going to hit someone with.
It was either one of my go-tos, either a knife or a hammer. I think it was a hammer.
Jeez.
But we were going to look out there and see what it was.
And so Caitlin like goes to the door and she's like,
hold on, wait. It's like a normal like deadbolt door, but on the other side is like a storm door, like a glass storm door.
Okay. And so she's like turning it and opening. She's like, someone's out here pulling on it. But really it was the suction between the door.
Oh my God.
It was hilarious.
Oh, God. Someone's locked us into our own house.
But like I said,
it really felt like someone was pulling on it as I was opening it.
It was hilarious.
As we're hearing the banging.
It was so serious, too.
That's
it felt like it.
But I mean, honestly, it could have happened in that neighborhood. Yeah.
Anyways.
But however, the house is still up for sale. If anyone's looking for a house in Columbia,
fancy. It's a cute little place between two divorced ladies that we love. Who watched over us in college.
Oh, they're hilarious.
How cute is that?
Yeah, they're awesome. But back on track here. Our real life spook story today has to do with jails as well. I interviewed the Berkeley County coroner, assuming that as the coroner, you would have to have some kind of spooky experience.
Oh,
and
I hope so.
It was kind of a letdown a little bit, but at least his part of it. He had one story, and it had nothing to do with being a coroner and working with dead bodies all the time. It more so had to do with the building that he worked in, the Berkeley County Courthouse. There is an old segment to it. And yeah, take a listen to what he said happened one night when he was working there late.
I'm George Oliver, the Berkeley County Coroner.
How long have you been here in Berkeley County?
I was born and raised in Berkeley County.
Oh my God.
I've been here all my life, 61 years.
And in that whole life so far, only one ghostly experience.
Pretty much. Really one that stands out in my mind. You know, we as teenagers and growing up, we always had these different places you would go to, like the Cordsville Light, you know, a railroad track. You look down and there's a light glowing down there and everybody, you know, gets excited and runs. But yeah, only one, and I just can't explain it. I'm not saying it was a ghost or anything like that, but it was a very unusual event. I was out on a call. I actually worked a call and came back to the office, and it was probably 12:30, 1 o'clock a.m. I was in the courthouse where our officers were at the time, and as far as I know, I was the only one in the building. And right above where our office is one of the courtrooms, the main courtroom in the old office, the old side of the courthouse. And I was sitting there doing my paperwork and all, and I could clearly hear footsteps walk across the floor up in the courtroom or the hallway right behind it. It was, no doubt, it was a female with heels on. You could just tell by that clicking on the floor and the pace that it appeared to be a female. And I looked at my watch again, and I'm saying, like, who would be up here at this time of morning? I went on about my business, and I never heard the steps come back across, or it was just like it went one way for a short period of time and stopped. And I never heard any more steps after that. So, you know, I checked around a day or two later, and nobody knows of anybody that would have been in the building. And it's a secure building. It's codes to get in. You know, it's it records when somebody comes in and out after hours, things like that. So but it was just nothing to indicate that anybody else was in the building. And it was so distinct. It was not like I just thought I heard something. I just stopped what I was doing and listened as the steps just went right across. I'd say a good 10, 15 steps. I mean, it was distinct enough. I could tell it was a person walking, and I assumed it was a female, and it sounded like somebody with heels because it was hitting that just like that. And it was kind of a fast pace, like I would say more of a woman's pace, you know, a quick step versus a man. And of course, the heels were making that louder noise on the floor. So,
nothing made you want to get up and go see?
Well, you know, with it being the courthouse, I didn't know whether maybe it was somebody up there that, you know, from the solicitor's office or something that were just burning the midnight oil trying to get a case ready for court, or it just didn't really hit me at the time to, well, go up there and see what it is. And, so I didn't, you know, I was just, and when it stopped, you know, I listened for a little bit, never heard anything else. I said, God, they must have left.
At what point do you remember thinking, wait, that was kind of odd?
Well, it was like when I started telling people about it, the time of night it was and all, and they said, that's kind of strange. Nobody else should have been in the building. I said, well, that's what I thought. But clearly I heard the steps. And then we have other little things like we had a bathroom right across the hall from our office, and you would be in there at night kind of working, and the toilet would flush. And, you know, I couldn't really make any heads or tails out of that because, you know, if it's leaking in the back of the tank, you know, the water's running. If it gets down, it might flush and bring it back up. So that never really bothered me, but...
There is kind of a running joke, though, of who it might be. Right?
Well, yeah, the previous coroner always thought it was this guy that was sentenced to the death penalty for killing a young lady in the upstate, and he always said, oh, that's who that is walking the halls, you know. And then a couple of our custodians that usually were up there after hours in the building and all, they were very weary about going into certain places of the building. And they even joked about my office one time because the way my office was set up, I had a window, but it was not to the where you could see it from the outside of the building. It was in like a gazebo area, atrium type thing. It was in a circle in the middle of the courthouse, and you could see it from the break area, like the little canteen. Mm-hmm. They would come in, so they would c- come in and clean their off, clean the offices, and as they would leave the offices, they would turn the lights off. Well, they said more than one time that after they had left and went to the canteen area and it would be cleaning that, they could clearly see my light was on through there. But they couldn't see anybody in the office, but the light was on. And I always said, well, did you go down there and turn it off? No, I ain't going down there. So, and they would hear creaks and, you know, little things. But I'm not a, you know, superstitious or anything like that. So it really never bothered me.
Yeah. But, what do you think, you know, if these are related to ghosts or hauntings in any way, what do you think might lend the Berkeley County Courthouse to, you know, being an area that these spirits are attracted to?
I wouldn't begin to even speculate on what would attract a spirit to a certain building or whether, other than the fact, unless you died there, or, you know, you always hear these different people believe that, you know, that the person didn't realize they were dead, so they have it crossed over, or whatever you believe. So as far as a courthouse, I wouldn't know what, to my knowledge, nobody ever died in a courthouse. There's been people that have been sentenced to death that have been in that courthouse or have came through there. Don't know whether that's a connection. You know, they're revisiting or what it may be, but, you know, we all see the movies, the horror movies, and how everything comes back, why something happens there, because, you know, families were murdered here, and so, you know, there's the ghost that's still there. I don't know what that would actually entail, or why a spirit would come back and be at a certain area. What would attract it? I don't know.
It does sound like the courthouse has a lot of history to it.
It does. It's a very old courthouse, the old side of it. It's a very old courthouse. They didn't tear it down. They just added on to it with the new side of it. So a lot of history there, and I mean, a lot of people have been through there. A lot of people have worked there that have since passed away. So it's been there a long time, a lot of history. And like I say, there's been a lot of people that's held positions in there and have worked there for many years and all that have since passed away. And could that be connected? I don't know.
The guy we were talking about, the serial killer, Larry Jean Bell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why was his case here in Berkeley County?
I think it received so much exposure in the upstate, they did a change of venue and moved that trial to Berkeley County. So he was actually tried in Berkeley County.
Was that a big thing here?
I think it was. Yeah, it's been a long time ago, but yeah, I think it was a big deal. Anytime you have a lot of publicity surrounding something and they move it, of course the media follows that as well. So yeah, I think that was a big case, but it still received a lot of publicity.
Larry Jean Bell.
He was electrocuted, so they were still doing that back then, in 1996. Isn't that crazy?
Whoa, that doesn't seem that long ago.
I know. He was electrocuted for the murders of Sharon Faye Smith and Deborah Mae Helmick, and he forced Smith, one of his victims, to write a last will and testament before he murdered her and taunted her family by telephone.
What a flying fuck.
So, basically, it's kind of crazy. He took her from her driveway by gunpoint, and then her car was found abandoned at the curb near a mailbox. Over the next few days, Bell called her family regularly from a payphone to tell them that she was fine and to taunt them. In fact, Sherry was likely killed within 12 hours of her abduction. Her body was found in Saluda County after Bell called the Smith family and gave them directions to her remains.
What? Yeah. Sicko.
And so he thinks that this is the guy that haunts the
jail.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like
not the high heels, but the other things that happen.
I think it was him with the
high heels. I mean, that
he was actually
Larry Jean,
wanted to be a woman.
Larry Jean, we've told you to take those high heels off. Larry Jean, you knock it out.
But he was saying that the other people that heard stuff, like the toilets flushing or whatever, like they joke kind of that it's Larry Jean Bell, but it is such an interesting like case that was handled in Berkeley County.
Very cool, Caitlin. What a cool opportunity to talk to him. Although I would have loved some dead bodies coming to life stories, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I would have loved one of those too.
That's all for this week's episode, y'all. Thanks so much for listening. We want to hear from you. Don't forget, email us your stories at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com.
Or give us a call at 843-564-2101.
And if you don't mind, leave us a review through whatever app you're using to listen to us right now. We've gotten some great ones so far, and we appreciate the feedback.
But don't leave a review unless it's good, okay? Thanks.
Or we'll come back and haunt you.
Woo!
Unrest in peace.